It is Friday, July 13th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, President Donald Trump says he has a lot of respect for British Prime Minister Theresa May after criticizing her in a newspaper interview. The U.S. charges 12 Russian military officers with conspiracy to interfere in the 2016 election. And doctors say breast milk and not formula is best for infants. It's all ahead. President Donald Trump Friday declared the U.S. relationship with Britain as the highest level of special. He rejected reports of troubled ties further frayed by his comments published in one of the highest circulation newspapers in Britain. Standing alongside the British Prime Minister outside her Chequers country estate, Trump defended his remarks in the newspaper interview, which were seen as further weakening Theresa May's hold on power. VOA White House Bureau Chief Steve Herman is in London and tells me about Trump's appearance at the news conference at the Prime Minister's country home.
Sarah, this was very much a repeat of what we saw at the NATO summit in Brussels earlier this week, where there was this fury and reports of dissension and controversy and the president making threats. And then when President Trump emerges and speaks to the media, he says he's worked everything out, he got his way, everybody's happy. And it was sort of the same thing with this news conference at Chequers outside Theresa May's country home today.
Because in this interview, he apparently criticized Theresa May, saying she didn't know how to do Brexit. And then he also praised one of her political rivals, right, Boris Johnson, who just resigned this week as a foreign minister.
Yes, the president's really not denying specifically any of the comments that he made to the newspaper. He's just saying that he wished they had put in the headlines his praise for the prime minister. Of course, that's not how journalism works. When something is extraordinary, unusual, different, that's what goes in the headline. So he would be expected on a normal day to say nice things about his host. But essentially, the headline was, May has wrecked Brexit, U.S. deal is off. What he said is, after speaking with Theresa May at dinner last night and then today with her and some of her aides and getting an explanation of this Brexit soft white paper, that he now believes a free trade agreement between the United States and the United Kingdom will be possible once Britain exits from the European Union.
Britain is probably the closest ally of the United States. They have been partners many years, certainly when you look at the Second World War and the Iraq War, a number of things. This comes at a time, though, today in London where you are, there are a lot of very well-attended protests against President Trump's visit there.
Certainly, we expect that perhaps 100 or more scattered protests around London to have tens of thousands of people out demonstrating against Donald Trump and what they say he represents. And the president was asked about these apparent troubled ties because of the comments he's made to the newspaper and other things that he has said. But he described the relationship with Britain as currently, quote, the highest level of special. So he also said he was very impressed by watching a demonstration of anti-terrorism exercises at the Royal Military Academy at Sandhurst early in the day. And he spoke of his affection for Britain because, as he noted several times today, that his mother was born in Scotland.
Yes, and in this visit, he has largely avoided London. He's been at Blenheim Palace, and he was at Chequers
right
today, and then he's going to Windsor Castle, and then he goes up to Scotland to his resort up there. So he really has not been in that much in the British capital, because of all these protests.
Well, he's been staying at Winfield House, which is the U.S. ambassador's residence here, but going to these various palaces and castles out of town by helicopter, which does make a lot of sense, but that does minimize the traffic jams in this normally very congested capital. But it also does prevent him from seeing any of the protesters close at hand.
That's VOA White House Bureau Chief Steve Herman. Journalist Jamie Detmer spoke with me as well about the controversy, beginning with the reputation of the Sun newspaper that printed the interview.
The Sun is a very pro-Brexit tabloid newspaper owned by Rupert Murdoch, who has long wanted Britain out of the European Union. The journalist who did the interview with Donald Trump did it actually on Wednesday, and it, I believe, was in the British Embassy in Brussels. Newton Dunn is the journalist's name. He's a pretty solid centrist journalist in many ways, but the Sun itself is very pro-Brexit and is quite in sympathy with criticisms of the European Union and even of NATO.
Well, in this most recent press conference, President Trump, he seems to have denied some of the things that he apparently said in this interview, saying that he didn't criticize the prime minister. He has a lot of respect for her. But apparently in this interview, he was quoted as saying that he told her how to do Brexit, but she didn't agree and she didn't listen to me.
Well, he now says he didn't. He meant that he just suggested the way she should negotiate Brexit. He's not actually denying the actual quotes that the Sun report. He's saying, though, they left out some positive comments that he made as well. It is true that he doesn't criticize her personally, but the viewpoint of Downing Street and the political class in Britain, and this has caused a real firestorm, this interview, is of the view that he's undermined her, that his comments, he talks up, for example, the Foreign Secretary, former Foreign Secretary Boris Johnson, who resigned earlier this week and is an adversary of the Prime Minister. He talks him up and says he'll make a great Prime Minister. He's critical in his remarks of the Prime Minister's so-called soft Brexit plan to leave the European Union, but to stay close and have a small carve-out of a free trade deal when it comes to goods. And it was very, very, even his supporters acknowledge it was a poorly timed interview that really has undercut the Prime Minister, really encouraged the hard Brexiters within her own party to carry on struggling against her, and they may organise a rebellion against her. There is a chance that there'll be a challenge within the Conservative Party to her leadership. It really is a very unusual interview. It really wades very deep into British domestic politics. Downing Street had always been on tenterhooks, worried that he may say something about Brexit, but I'm told by a Downing Street official they hadn't expected him to go this far, and Downing Street is pretty furious about this.
He also commented in the interview and at the press conference today about immigration, and he said that immigration is changing the culture of Europe, and it is a negative.
Yes, he did, and that's also caused a big storm here. I mean, the whole interview is very much, I suppose, you could say from the standpoint of a populist nationalist, and you can say things, you know, back in the United States about United States politics, and it will appeal maybe to your voter base. But if you speak your mind so much or shoot from the hip, if you want to put it that way, when you're dealing with diplomacy, it does cause problems. There are consequences. European leaders generally are feeling very bruised this week. We had a tumultuous two-day NATO summit with a lot of spats between European officials and Donald Trump. There has been, at the end of the day, an agreement. He signed on to a common statement that rebukes Russia for the annexation of Crimea, that supports the idea of the principle of collective defense for the European Union. So there's some relief about what he signed on to. But in many ways, the criticism, even by some of his supporters, and I heard, and also officials, and I heard Anthony Gardner the other day, who's a former US ambassador to the European Union, saying that he does have some legitimate grievances against NATO and the European Union in terms of trade policy and not providing enough defense spending themselves to contribute to NATO. But Gardner's point was the manner of the way Trump is speaking to other leaders is counterproductive and risks really loosening the ties between Europe and the United States.
Journalist Jamie Detmer. Here are some of the top news stories that are trending. A regional assembly candidate is among the more than 70 people killed in a blast in Pakistan. Israel downs a second Syrian drone this week. The opposition is divided as Zimbabwe prepares for post-Mugabe elections, and a report says 54 Islamic State fighters and civilians are killed in eastern Syria during an air raid. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the voanews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
Since 2016, a fast-spreading agricultural pest called Spodoptera frugiperda, or the fall armyworm, has been threatening the food security of people who live in countries across sub-Saharan Africa. According to the Food and Agriculture Organization of the United Nations, this pest can cause significant damage to many hectares of crops, especially maize. Although many African farmers may have heard of the new pest, researchers from the Pennsylvania State University, who teamed up with the FAO, developed a new Android phone app called Nuru to help detect it. Nuru uses specially developed artificial intelligence algorithms and the imaging abilities of the phone. To confirm whether a suspected plant is actually infested with the pest, all the farmer has to do is hold the phone next to it and snap a picture. The app can be downloaded for free from Google Play. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, President Trump will meet with Russian President Vladimir Putin on Monday, and we'll have a preview. The Justice Department announced charges Friday against 12 Russian intelligence officers for hacking offenses during the 2016 presidential election. The indictments were announced Friday by Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein as part of the ongoing special counsel probe into potential coordination between the Trump campaign and Russia. The Russians are accused of hacking into the computer networks of the Democratic National Committee, the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, and the presidential campaign of Hillary Clinton, and then releasing stolen emails on the internet in the months before the election. Before Friday, 20 people and three companies had been charged in the Mueller investigation. That includes four former Trump campaign and White House aides and 13 Russians accused of participating in a hidden but powerful social media campaign to sway American public opinion in the 2016 election. Rosenstein spoke about the controversy caused by the continuing investigation.
I want to caution you, the people who speculate about federal investigations usually do not know all of the relevant facts. We do not try cases on television or in congressional hearings. Most anonymous leaks are not from the government officials who are actually conducting these investigations. We follow the rule of law, which means that we follow procedures and we reserve judgment. We complete our investigations and we evaluate all of the relevant evidence before we reach any conclusion.
Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein. President Trump is scheduled to meet his Russian counterpart Monday in the Finnish city of Helsinki. It's their first one-on-one meeting overshadowed by chilly ties over allegations of Russian interference in the U.S. electoral process, its backing of the Syrian regime, and aggression in Eastern Europe. The venue evokes memories of the Cold War. It was there that the so-called Helsinki Accords created a European security architecture in the 1970s, easing U.S.-Soviet tensions. It was the first such U.S.-Russian summit in 8 years, underscoring the lack of high-level diplomatic contact between the two countries. Conflicts in Ukraine and Syria appeared to be the most urgent problems, and the meeting follows separate talks this week between Putin and Israel's prime minister and a senior advisor to Iran's supreme leader, the Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, at the Kremlin. Benoit Kampmark is a senior lecturer in global studies at Australia's RMIT University. He tells International Edition's Victor Beatty the U.S.-Russia summit is an acknowledgement of the geopolitical reality of Russia's renewed importance.
certainly when it comes to the Middle East, it's revived its significant importance there, primarily through its role in Syria and by its cooperation with Iran. It also demonstrates, of course, an effort being made by Vladimir Putin to, as it were, advance his credentials to the Trump administration and, of course, in broader security areas. So the reality that the summit is happening is perhaps an acknowledgement that Russia has a role to play in various areas. It's not always liked, of course, in these areas, primarily over its peripheral interests, be it, for example, in Ukraine and be it the EU, but more broadly speaking, it's an acknowledgement about its significance in international relations.
Is Russia the bad guy?
It's a very convenient bad guy, but it's, as always, it's never black and white when it comes to international relations. And I think the very fact that Mr. Trump himself said, even at the annexation of Crimea by Putin in 2014, his remark was actually, it was a rather good idea, which was a very interesting thing for interest at the time. And even then, there have been some worries, and I think this is a significant thing to note, by be it European allies, be it by Ukraine, about the possibility that Mr. Trump will warm to Mr. Putin in terms of the Crimean issue especially and in terms of legitimizing Russia's taking of Crimea.
Is there a concern Mr. Putin may dominate at this meeting?
Well, there is a sense that Mr. Putin has all the cards and he's the expert, he's the seasoned veteran who's been there for years, and Mr. Trump is essentially a novice when it comes to international relations. But that would be to underestimate the fact that Mr. Trump has, of course, as ever, his perspective on making a deal. That'll be the primary objective in terms of whether anything can be made or drawn. Mr. Putin, of course, wants the sanctions reduced and removed as much as possible, certainly those that were imposed by the EU and the United States after 2014. And, of course, that's going to be a considerable point in terms of their discussions.
This will be the first U.S.-Russia summit in 8 years. What positive might come out of this?
Well, the issue will be whether, for example, the issue about whether the sanctions regime might be adjusted towards Russia. That will be certainly in Moscow's interest. But the other issue, too, will be to see whether Russia can be allowed a foot back into certain international fora. For example, the G7. In terms of whether they're lasting agreements, this will have to do with whether those goals are fulfilled.
Do you see anything good coming out of this summit?
It's always good in a sense if Russia and the United States have amicable relations, in the sense that both are dominant engaging powers. The United States, of course, by far is the most dominant one. But the reality is that given Russia's role in various security theaters in the world and given its importance in addressing the environment, energy, security, terrorism, all of these matters are fundamental to the relationship. So having the United States and Russia on good terms can be of benefit and I think should be considered in that light.
Binoy Kapmark of RMIT University. This is VOA.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Next on the program, U.S. President Donald Trump renews criticism of NATO, even as member states pledge to raise military spending and provide critical support for the erstwhile 29-nation alliance. We'll discuss the tone, substance, and outcome of the summit with two veteran NATO analysts. That's Encounter this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.
This is International Edition. World health officials reported to be stunned when the U.S. opposed a resolution for countries to encourage breastfeeding, especially when decades of research show that is best for both mothers and babies. VOA's Carol Pearson spoke to two prominent doctors who wholly support the U.N. resolution based on scientific studies.
Millions of babies around the world would thrive if only they received mother's milk for the first 6 months of life, or even longer. The findings come from the largest and most detailed analysis of the benefits of breastfeeding. It was published in the Lancet Medical Journal 2 years ago. The study showed breastfeeding could save the lives of 800,000 babies per year. Dr. Dennis Kuo heads the General Pediatrics Unit at the University of Buffalo Medical Center. Speaking via Skype, he says while women need options, science is clearly on the side of breastfeeding.
The science of breastfeeding has been established for several decades.
Dr. Joan Younger Meek of the Florida State University College of Medicine said in a Skype interview, breastfeeding improves nutrition, decreases infections, and is cheaper than formula.
We know that right after birth, when the mother puts the baby to breast, the baby gets the colostrum, the early milk that the mother produces, and it's very high in immunoglobulins that protect the baby from infection. So that milk is critically important for babies. And then continued exclusive breastfeeding continues to support those health benefits for the baby.
For women to use infant formula, they need clean water, not just for the formula, but the bottles need to be clean. The nipples and spoons used to measure formula also need to be clean. If not, the baby can get diarrhea, which can be fatal. Dr. Kuo says because formula is expensive, if a mother tries to stretch it out, the baby will not get enough to eat.
The benefits of breastfeeding are extraordinarily high to be able to protect against these illnesses.
Breastfed babies have fewer ear infections, fewer digestive problems. They grow differently. Breast milk even protects children from obesity later in life. Dr. Dennis Kuo says formulas have improved over time with the addition of fatty acids and better quality proteins. But, he says, nothing can replace breast milk.
I appreciate that formulas continually do get better and better, but I have noticed that even our colleagues who work in the formula industry acknowledge that breast milk is the gold standard.
Breastfeeding also has clear benefits for the mother as well. For one thing, it reduces the chance that she'll hemorrhage after giving birth. Doctors say women need to be supported by their physicians, families, communities, and by their employers in order to breastfeed their babies successfully so the babies can thrive. Carol Pearson, VOA News, Washington.
And that is our show. Please visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us. Have a great weekend.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
This month marks the 7th anniversary of the emergence of South Sudan as a nation. In a press statement, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo extended the United States' best wishes to the people of South Sudan. But what should have been a day of celebration for the African nation, rejoicing at the start of an era of greater peace and prosperity, did not happen. For the third year in a row, Independence Day celebrations were canceled because of the devastating conflict which is imposing great suffering on South Sudan's diverse citizens. As Secretary Pompeo wrote, they have already paid a heavy price for their leaders' divisions, driven from their homes, facing life-threatening hunger, and subjected to unspeakable cruelty. The conflict in South Sudan started in 2013, 2 years after the country gained its independence from Sudan. It began as a power struggle between President Salva Kiir and Vice President Riek Machar. Thousands have been killed and millions displaced by violence. A number of ceasefires and a 2015 peace agreement between the warring parties have been broken. Earlier this year, the United States imposed restrictions on the export of defense articles and defense services into South Sudan. The U.S. does not directly sell arms to South Sudan. But the ban prevents any U.S. company or citizen from providing military equipment or defense services to the warring factions. The U.S. has called on all nations to halt the flow of arms into the country and to stop supporting actors who are working to destabilize it. Secretary of State Pompeo noted that talks between the parties are continuing. He emphasized that South Sudanese leaders must make the tough choices to put aside narrow self-interest and put the needs of the nation first. We call upon the government of South Sudan and all parties to the conflict to immediately stop the bloodshed and genuinely resolve their differences through dialogue that reflects the voices of a broad spectrum of society. Only when the fighting stops can South Sudan begin on a path towards inclusive economic growth and genuine reconciliation. The United States remains a friend of the South Sudanese people, Mr. Pompeo said. We stand ready to work with responsible leaders who are willing to deliver the peace, opportunity, and justice the people of South Sudan have long awaited.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.